98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Top stories of the day, all put on the plate for you on this Valentine's Day. We call it the 4 o'clock reset. Our reaction, the top stories of the day in sports, starting with the Phoenix Suns, mercifully going into the All-Star break. Losers, though, of 15 straight games, which ties the all-time franchise record.
Yeah, but here come the Cavs.
They're actually going there.
The Cavs are coming.
In like a week. Suns lose to the Clippers last night, 134-107, and they'll have to beat one of the worst teams in the NBA on the road in the Cleveland Cavaliers to avoid setting the all-time record for franchise losing streak.
Yeah. I mean, you got to find, if they can't beat the Cavs, you have to wonder if they're going to win any more games the rest of the year, to be honest with you. There's not a lot of games left. They got 11. Can they get to 15?
23 games left.
Can they get to 15?
The franchise record, I think, is 16 in their expansion year in terms of wins. Can they win 6 more games to avoid being the worst team in the history of the Phoenix Suns franchise, at least in terms of a win total? That's the number you have to aim for, as pathetic as it is to say.
Got to reach deep, got to find a reason to play. I mean, you got to want to win some games. You have to. I mean, it's been a miserable year. Everybody's going to wait for this year to end and see what they could do to try to rebuild this thing. But this losing streak's at 15. That says enough about the season.
Ties a franchise record. DraftWire.com, though not included in our Kyler Murray mock draft bet, did become one of the first mock drafts to have the Cardinals taking Kyler Murray number one overall. They released their 3-round mock today.
There's so many mock draft people that want to put him there at number one, and somebody finally did.
When?
They've been waiting. A lot of people want to get him there.
Sure. We'll find out when one of the mainstream mock drafts does it, because we have a kind of a bet on the Burns and Gambo show when that date's going to be. We did not put DraftWire.com on our list, but they've got Kyler Murray going number one to the Cardinals.
Yeah, it's... We got to see what the kid does at the combine. We have to see how much he weighs, what his height is. We have to see how he does in the interview process. Way too early right now to put him at number one. Way too early. He may get there eventually, but he shouldn't be there now.
According to a report from the San Diego Union-Tribune, Padres GM A.J. Preller flew to Miami to meet with Manny Machado and his wife sometime in the last week or so. Padres were said to be perhaps dipping their toe into the Bryce Harper waters. Perhaps they're doing the same thing with Manny Machado. We'll see. Nothing has come from that definitively.
This is what the agents want. They want a team like the Padres to go spend $200, $300 million and try to win.
Yeah.
I mean, this is exactly what the agents are saying. They want to find owners that want to go sign guys to 10-year deals.
But our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show centers around ASU basketball. And what one noted bracketologist said was actually their second best loss all season. Last night to Colorado, they lose on the road by a score of 77-73.
Just didn't feel like the way McKinley was playing, running the point for Colorado, and then the Bay kid was grabbing every rebound humanly possible, just dominating there, and ASU couldn't hit a shot, and you kept waiting for them to make a little bit of a run, close first half, and in the second half, close to it until McKinley, with about 3 minutes left, McKinley hit a three-pointer. They could put him up by 8, and then from that point forward, it was tough. I mean, ASU missed some free throws. They were missing a lot of shots. Bobby Hurley was losing his mind on every possession. It was so many calls that were, did the ball touch the rim? Was it goaltending? Was it not goaltending? Who was the ball off of? I mean, there was a lot of plays. Was it, was it a flagrant foul on when Dort got hit with the elbow? And why did Colorado get 2 free throws out of it when it was a flagrant foul and they get 2 shots? So there was a lot of debates going on. Bobby was losing his mind. Colorado wins the game. They're an average team in the Pac-12. Very, very average. This is the first time that they've ever won 4 straight Pac-12 games in a row. But I think that's a tough loss for ASU. And I'm worried. I'm legitimately worried now that they're not going to make the NCAA tournament.
Because you start doing the math and you just wonder, what do they have to do to get there? And are they capable of that? I mean, we were talking about this earlier. Do they have to go 4-2? Do they have to go 5-1? How deep of a run do they have to make into the Pac-12 tournament? Do they, their opportunity to collect quality wins from here on out? We've been talking about quad 1, quad 2, quad 3, quad 4. I mean, how many more chances do they have? And I do believe what makes it so hard to forecast is you're trying to predict what's going to go on around them. You know, what's going to go on for all the other bubble teams and what they're going to do and who are they going to lose to. Look, after they beat Washington over the weekend, Jerry Palm, noted bracketologist, had them in as an 11 seed.
11.
And not playing in one of those first four games, but in as an 11 seed. Now, how last night changes that, I don't know. I haven't seen a latest bracketology report from Jerry Palm, but as of a couple of days ago, he thought they were in as an 11.
Well, they got to drop a little bit, right? Because they just lost on the road to Colorado.
You know,
not a very good team, so they got to drop a little bit. I talked with Casey Jacobson this morning. He thought the Washington State loss put the nail in the coffin, that they're not a tournament team. He thinks that they've got to win out and at least get to the Pac-12 conference tournament championship game. And that's not very realistic to think that they're going to go 6-0. You know, their net rating was in the 70s. It's going to drop after the loss to Colorado. You know, Casey told me he thinks that they're clearly the second best team in the league. I mean, he was courtside for the Nevada game. He thinks that, you know, that they are the second best team in the league, but he doesn't even think that they're on the fence. He thinks that it's a one-bid league. It's just Washington unless somebody else wins the conference championship. And he even looked forward, and he looked forward at the ASU schedule. He goes, there's one more win that could be a quad one win, and that's Oregon. But that's only if Oregon is able to stay as a quad one team. If they lose a game or two, they could be knocked out of the quad one. So you've got two quad four losses for ASU. You've got a lot of losses that are in that, you know, 2-3-4 range. And it just, you know, with six games left, I think 5-1 and then a little bit of a run in the tournament could get them in.
Yeah, I
think 4-2 is going to be
close.
I think 4-2 is going to.
And look, let's.
I think 4-2 and they're out.
Let's call it like it is.
Unless they win the Pac-12 tournament.
I don't know if they're capable of going 4-2. They should be. They should be able to go 4-2 against the schedule, but I don't know if they've got it in them. I really don't.
They got Utah next.
They're so wildly inconsistent. To follow up your... Okay, so let's look at what's happened to ASU basketball in the last week. Lose to Washington State at home inexplicably, maybe your worst game of the year. Follow that up with arguably your best win of the year against Washington. Then go on the road to Colorado, a very ho-hum team, and lose on the road the way they did. It's up and down and up and down. Can they even go 4-2?
They just dropped two. It just got updated 5 minutes ago. The Arizona State fell to 74 in the net rankings. They were 72. They fell to 74.
Which still is a terrible number.
It's a terrible number. It's not a good number.
And they're not going to give themselves a lot of opportunities to improve upon that number.
No.
Not giving themselves a lot of opportunities to that number go up. They're in trouble.
Yeah, their net rating, which is an important rate. Their net rating is 74. So they went from 72 to 74 with that loss. They only dropped two spots, but they did drop. There's six games left. If they lose two of those games, now you're 20-10. Does a 20-10 Arizona State team with the bad losses they have get in the tournament?
With losses to Princeton, with losses to Washington State.
You still need 68 teams, though. Like, you're still got to find 68 teams
and that,
to put in.
And that, to me, I think is the one thing working in their favor. I really do believe that, is that if you look at the field and who you're comparing them to and you're comparing resumes, I think you're going to find a lot of teams that have really suspect resumes, just like ASU does. And that's what you have to count on. You have to count on that in the comparison game, that ASU doesn't look as bad when compared to some of these other bubble teams that are fighting. I think that's going to be their saving grace.
Best thing for the Pac-12 is that somebody besides Washington wins. Because if this is a this will be the biggest embarrassment the Pac-12 has ever suffered. Worse than when they didn't win a bowl game last year. That would be worse.
To put ASU's net rating into focus here,
yeah.
U of A is 86. Grand Canyon is 87.
Wow.
Oregon fell. They were 64th. They just fell to 67th. So Oregon may not be able to be a quad one win for them if they can win the Oregon game.
It has been nearly a month since their last win. But that doesn't mean the Suns' current 15-game losing streak has been boring. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Size franchise record for the longest losing streak in organizational history. A mark that was set, just about a year ago. Welcome to the Phoenix Suns and
breaking records.
It's the numbers are in
Breaking hearts and breaking records.
Since January 1st of last year, the Suns are 17-85.
Which is a higher percentage than Alex Avila's batting average.
I could literally see Jordan Bird shaking his head out
like,
of the corner of my eye. Like he's just,
you know how many bad teams there are in the NBA every year? There's 10 bad teams every year. You're 17-85?
Over the last 85, this is the number I like. This comes from the 17-85 I got from Bob Young. Over the last 85 games, okay, so this season and the last, I don't know, 26 or so of last year. Over the last 85 games, according to Evan Sidery, the Phoenix Suns have a record of 13 wins, 72 losses. 25% of those 72 losses have been by 20 or more points. That is, I mean, that's, how can you not be humiliated by a number like that? How can you not be you're trying to find positives in that? Good luck to you. Let me know how that works. Not you. I know you're not. But, I mean, to think as an organization that you could fall that low. You've lost 72 of the last 85 games you've played.
Because there are teams that believe that the best way to recover, the best way to lose.
Okay, but
to pick first.
But remember what
the DeAndre Ayton, to pick fourth with Josh Jackson, to pick fourth with Dragan Bender. That's...
Okay, but part of this is, remember what the owner told us at the beginning of the season? That this was flip the switch time, right?
Yeah.
This was the season we're going to flip the switch.
And he saw Zion Williamson. It's like, hey, you know what? I can wait another year to flip the switch.
I mean, how much longer are you going to wait to flip the switch? Can you flip the switch? Do you even have the pieces in place or the people in power to be able to flip the switch if you even chose to? Or have you become enamored with yet another 19-year-old player that you think is going to change the direction of the franchise? I mean, it's just,
I don't think they know how to win. I really don't think that's the
most accurate thing you've said all day. I don't think they know how. I don't think they've hired people who know how. I think there's so much inexperience there. There's no blueprint. The people authoring they're drawing up blueprints. They've never built a house before. How can you draw up a blueprint to build a house if you've never even built one before?
Listen, I've talked to NBA. I talked to a couple different NBA executives today, and they just feel like, look, there's no accountability on any level. There's nothing that a coach could do right now. This organization just needs radical, sweeping changes. It needs to put someone in charge that really knows what they're doing. There's a lot of people that are embarrassed to be a part of this right now.
How long have we been saying this, though? How long have we been talking about this?
The team was put together incredibly, incredibly poorly. And here's a line I got from an NBA executive. It's so far from running an organization correctly, it's comical. It's comical.
Yeah.
So far behind the eight ball, they don't even know the questions to ask. Is one of the things that somebody told me. The Suns are so far behind the eight ball, I didn't even know the questions to ask.
But in the midst of this 15-game losing streak, and if you start to think about everything that has happened during this 15-game losing streak, it's actually quite remarkable. Here it is. Here is the last month of your life if you're a Phoenix Suns fan. Here's not one, not two, but three buzzer-beater losses.
Siakam with 6 seconds. Siakam with five. Siakam with four. Three, two. Siakam on the drive. His shot is good, and the game is over if that counts, if he got it off in time. Rose against Bridges. Here's the 18-footer. He hit it. Derrick Rose has been the man of the hour. Rudy Gay waits 3 seconds, 2 seconds. Gay throws up a shot. He got it. Rudy Gay has just won the game for San Antonio.
Were they all on the road? I just kept the crowd kept cheering.
Yes, they were on the road.
They were all on the road.
I had to think about the Minnesota one for a second, but they
were. All of those games were on the road.
Yeah, they were all on the road.
Yeah, you know, listen, that's what scared. They tease you. They put up some fight every once in a while, but clearly the other team's not playing to the best of their ability. And the Suns sometimes can steal a win. They haven't been able to get it. They've come close 3 times. I don't know how long this losing streak continues. I just want to get to the end of the season and see what the game plan is. But, you know, it might be time for radical changes. You could be patient and you could wait and you could see if this thing plays out, you know, the right way. I mean, I don't. It might work. Like, it might. Like, if you left this team alone. But you just worry about the culture of losing that they're in, the environment, just how much of a toll is it taking on these guys? How beaten down can these guys get? Like, how beaten down are they losing game 17 and 80, whatever the record was you were telling me?
17 and I went away from that page. Hold on a second.
Sorry.
13 and 72.
13 and 72.
Over their last 85 games. Yep.
You lost 72 out of your last 85 games.
Yeah. There were long showers in Denver after a loss there, a thinly disguised way of saying a team meeting.
What about this air just caused the meeting or whatever was happening?
What meeting?
Okay, then what was happening in here?
I just showered. It just seemed like a longer cooling off period than normal. I like long showers.
That was courtesy AZ Central. So you've had long showers during this 15-game losing streak. You had the trade deadline circus. We had a Lonzo Ball fascination for about 4 days.
Hey, if you get all three, I guarantee you will get championships. If I don't, I will jump off the roof on my knees. I won't even put my feet down.
Yeah, LeVar is not afraid of LeBron. He's not afraid of Jesus. We found that out over the course of that week. That was
good. Are you drunk?
And he asked Wolf if he was drunk. Booker got 5,000 career points. Didn't really care.
I don't care anymore. You know, it's like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. It's almost the same thing. And, you know, now I'm just in a point in my career where, you know, I just want to be a winner. You know, I've done the individual accolades countless numbers of times. So, you know, for me now is figuring out how to win. And we're not doing that right now. So, you know, until we start winning, you know, that's when all those things will matter to me.
You had the image of Booker trying to run into the hallway to get into that fight with Jang and being held literally by the waistband like he was being given an atomic wedgie from the director of security for the Suns as he was trying to run back into the hall. And somehow,
let me into Megula.
Somehow, in the middle of all of this, the arena renovation passed with the Phoenix City Council.
I'm excited for the citizens of Phoenix. I'm excited for the Suns. And, you know, it's a relationship that has worked really well for the last 26 years, and it should continue. You know, we are the Phoenix Suns, and this is where we belong. And I'm appreciative of everybody that's worked on this, and obviously the support of the mayor and the council and the city.
All of that happened in and around a 15-game losing streak.
You know what? We never thought we'd be here. I mean, we just never thought that we'd be here again. We never thought that the Suns would be here talking about getting the number one pick in the draft. Last year, we thought that was it. You got eight, and that's it. It's time to win. Make your moves. They brought in Trevor Ariza. They brought in Ryan Anderson. Both of those moves were colossal disasters. Like, literally two of the worst moves that the franchise has ever made. I mean, like, if you went to the worst moves that the Phoenix Suns have ever made, bringing in Ryan Anderson and Trevor Ariza were two of the worst.
Yeah.
They were just awful moves. Ariza was one of the worst moves ever. You know, the Haydou Turkoglu, Hakeem Warrick, Josh Childress years. I mean, this equals that.
I'll tell you what, of all those losses, the one that sticks in my craw the most still to this day is that loss at home to the Atlanta Hawks. They were on the second night of a back-to-back. The Suns had just given that really good effort against the San Antonio Spurs a couple of nights. They were home against one of the worst teams in the league, and they lost to the Atlanta Hawks at home. They called it a must-win game going into that game, and they lost at home to Atlanta.
Of
the 15, that's the one that just stands out.
The Atlanta game?
That's the one. That's like,
oh, that's gonna be Trump by Cleveland.
You lost.
If you lose
that
game, if they lose to the Cavs,
I
go on another epic rant if they lose to the Cavs.
Uh oh.
Like if they lose to the Cavs.
Uh oh. Tomorrow we're broadcasting live from GCU to get the Lopes all pumped up for their first baseball game in the newly renovated Brazel Field. Head to the events page at arizonasports.com for complete details. Make sure you bring your blood pressure meds for that particular show. That's next week when the Suns play the Cavs. His talent, his flexibility makes him the Diamondback Swiss Army knife. What is the best way to utilize Ketel Marte? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
I believe we've added a poll question to the Twitter poll questions of the day.
Absolutely. This is all Gambo right here. What's your current marital status with the Phoenix Suns? 57% say we're on a break. 8% say I'm getting divorced. 23% say I'm seeing other people. And 12% say I'm having an affair with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Why the Bucks?
Because they're in first place in the East, and you were raving about the Bucks a few weeks ago. You were saying saying go Bucks.
Yeah. We were on a break!
The responses to this are pretty good, if you guys want me to read some of these.
Yeah, go ahead, read a couple.
Okay, one guy says dumped her and dating her high school rival just to piss her off.
I mean,
does that mean
man.
He's rooting for the Lakers? I mean, what is that?
Dumped her to date the high school rival.
That's terrible.
Tony Ooh. Says the Bucks are the woman in the red dress right now. And my personal favorite, Ryan says sleeping in the other room because the Suns snore and fart in their sleep.
Wow.
We're right. in marriage counseling.
Yeah, I guess so. But these points are tough days for the Phoenix Suns.
Wow.
All right, what's the second question? I'm almost afraid to ask now. What's the second question?
The second poll question, we'll go with this one just because ASU lost last night and their tournament hopes are fading fast. But which has been a bigger disappointment this season? Putting your fandom aside, who has been a bigger disappointment, ASU or U of A? 56% say ASU, 44% say Arizona. I think it's Arizona, personally.
Yeah, me too. I mean, they still like Brandon Williams came in, and it's still like all the kids are on a bench last year were still good players that they recruited, and they can't win a game to save their lives right now.
Yeah.
I'd say Arizona.
All right.
I mean, Arizona State still has a chance to get to the tournament. They're just going to have to finish strong.
Those are the poll questions. You can find them on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. Once again, another day of good interviews out of Doug and Wolf today. Newsmakers Week tomorrow. They're going to have Cliff Kingsbury in studio. Be curious to see what K2 has to say and what sort of questions are asked and what sort of answers are given. Today, Mike Hazen was in, the GM of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and I know this soundbite's been getting a lot of play around here all day long since he said it, and what's interesting about this is he was not asked a specific question. At the end of every interview, they say, hey, what do you want to tell the fans about the Arizona Coyotes, or what do you want to tell the fans about the Phoenix Mercury? And Mike Hazen was, okay, what do you want to tell the fans about the Arizona Diamondbacks? This is what he came up with, all on his own.
I know that from a preparation manager, coach's standpoint, that's going to be there. I know our players are hungry to take what happened last year and do something about that now. I think they've had to chew on it all offseason. Nobody likes what happened in September last year. It's embarrassing. We were in first place for 5 months. We finished 8 games out of first place. I mean, that's not something that sits well with anybody.
Just words, or do you think the guys in that clubhouse are actually literally embarrassed by what happened at the end of last season?
I'm sure some are. I'm sure some guys like, hey, we get everything we had. We fought as hard as we could. You know, it just didn't work out. I mean, the Dodgers got hot, and they just couldn't. And another guy, I mean, there's a lot of changes, too, right? I mean, no Paul Goldschmidt, no A.J. Pollock, no Patrick Corbin, no Clay Buchholz. I mean, how many new faces are on this roster? There's a lot of new faces.
Well, didn't you mention the other
Mathis
day?
Mathis is gone.
You could possibly project up to six new players in
starting positions.
Different defensive positions that they were before. Either new players or playing in a different position than what we're
accustomed to seeing. Jeff Mathis is a key player. He's gone. Descalso was a key player. He's gone. Goldschmidt was a key player.
Sure.
He's gone. AJ was a key player. Corbin was a key player. Clay Buchholz, Brad Boxberger. I mean, so to sit there and say all those guys are, you know, those guys are there. A lot of the key guys are gone. A lot of them, like eight key guys are gone from last year.
Of course, and it makes projecting. Although, man,
Brad Ziegler, who was a part of that team, right? He got traded for him, but he was a big part of it down the stretch. He's retired.
Continue to see a lot of projections that basically classify the Diamondbacks at or around 500 next year, which is what they were last year when they had all those guys. It blows my mind. It really does. I'm shocked that there are that many legitimate websites and credentialed media types who think that this is still basically a 500 team based off of the talent that they have. Mike Hazen also during Newsmakers Week, a lot of conversation about center field, as you would expect. You've talked about Adam Jones. We'll talk about that in a second. As far as Marte goes, they think he can play well at a bunch of different spots.
I think Marte is a very, very talented player, and he's a smart player, mm-hmm. and he's got great instincts, and we feel like Marte is going to be able to play short, second, and center field for
us.
We look at Marte the way I would look at Chris Bryant, Chris Taylor, those types of players that are excel in multiple positions and are really, really good players, and that's how we view him.
And because he's so talented, it allows them the flexibility to move him around at will.
His athleticism and intelligence allows us to even consider something like this. So I would imagine you're going to see him in days at shortstop, second base, and center field. Dyson is an exceptional center fielder. He's going to play out in center field. You may see things happen during games where Torrey, we're trying to give him as much flexibility as we can. We think that's a huge strength of other teams. We feel like, again, if we're looking at the little edges that's going to help us win beyond what we used to be offensively, these types of things are going to be part of that.
We never talk about the Marte difference. We talk about the guys that can rebound, guys that need to have a better year, a bounce back year. Steven Souza, Robbie Ray. Ketel Marte is 25 years old, just coming into his prime. He could be the face of the franchise. He could be the best player. He could be an all-star. The kid's very capable of hitting 300. He's very capable of hitting 20 to 25 home runs. He's very capable of driving in 80 to 85 runs. He's capable of stealing a lot of bases if they want him to do that. He's very capable of being a complete ball player. Whether he puts it all together or not, I don't know. But like, you would think that he's trending in that right direction. He's a good ball player. Everybody likes Ketel Marte. He's good. How good can he be? Can he end up being the best player on the team? Can he end up being the best all-around player in his baseball team?
Some people around baseball think he's a real breakout candidate type player this year.
Yes.
That he's capable of that, that he has that in him. We'll see. I'll be honest with you. I've been so, we talked about this earlier, I've been so focused on what they lost. And like you say, the bounce back players, the Lambs and the Rays and the Archies and the guys who had subpar years last year and whether they can return to form this year. I've been so busy thinking about that and what they've lost. I haven't given a lot of thought to Ketel Marte's ceiling and his upside and how high that ceiling is and how high he can go and how good he can be. I haven't thought much about it.
No.
I do know this.
Because he's so young.
Yeah.
But he has the potential to be a great player. We've seen the tools are there. The tools are there.
Yeah. It's interesting in that when Wilmer Flores was signed, the belief at that moment was Ketel Marte is going to be the center fielder. And Zach Buchanan of The Athletic contacted Marte in the Dominican Republic and said, are you okay with that? And he said at the time, and I'm paraphrasing here, I am, but if you're going to play me at center field, leave me at center field. I don't want to be bounced around every single game or every single week. If I'm your center fielder, I'm your guy. Apparently now, again, according to Buchanan's Twitter account, he softened that stance a little bit. That he understands he might start the game in center and then in the fifth or sixth move in and play second or move over and play short depending on the matchups and the things that they want to play. That he might not be able to just be a position, that's it, that's where you're going to be the whole time. And it sounds like somebody talked to him a little bit because he sounds like he's cool with it now.
Because I think
he's okay with moving around.
I think they would like to add a center fielder. I keep telling you that they'd like to add Adam Jones on a one-year deal. If Adam Jones is willing to accept a one-year deal, he could be a guy. But if I just give you Paul Goldschmidt's RBI numbers last year, 83, can Marte duplicate that?
He probably can.
Goldie hit 290? Now, Goldie did hit 33 home runs. That's where Marte probably can't get to. Is those power numbers.
Yeah.
Probably can't, but he could drive in runs and he could hit for average.
ASU and the rest of the Pac-12 have struggled this season. Is the conference really just as bad as a one-bid league? That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. ASU is in a tricky spot. And joining us right now here on the Burns and Gambo Show, we've actually been talking about him a couple of times now.
I know he was busy today. He's got the BYU game he's calling tonight. So
apparently he's got a few minutes.
I wasn't even
going
to ask him to come on the show.
We appreciate. Hey, you know what? Casey Jacobson from Fox Sports 1, he called last night's ASU's basketball game. Thanks for squeezing us in, Case. We appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. I was talking with Gambo at the airport today, and I figured if I can carve out some space to talk to you gentlemen, I want to, so it's my pleasure.
Well, we're worried. I mean, we're worried after the Washington State loss and now the Colorado loss. And they just updated the net ratings about 15 minutes ago. They fell two more spots to number 74. So here's a team, you know, with six games left with a net rating of 74 and some bad losses. You did the game last night. Should ASU fans be worried about their chances to get into the NCAA tournament?
No question, they should be worried. They're not an at-large bid team right now, despite the fact that they had clearly the best non-conference for the second consecutive year, mind you, the best non-conference of any Pac-12 team with their two quad one wins. Mississippi State is still a top 25 team, and Kansas at home. But to build a resume, it isn't just about your quality wins. I would start there, okay? But then you have to go down to avoiding bad losses. That is something that Washington has done so well. Arizona State has better wins this year than Washington, but Washington's been consistent. They have no quad three or quad four losses. And Arizona State has two quad four losses and a couple of quad three losses as well. And last night, that opportunity that they had against a Colorado team was good, but not as talented. Colorado, and I would say this even with Tom Boyle, who I have a ton of respect for, the head coach of Colorado, if you were on the line with us right now, Arizona State is more talented than Colorado. And I don't care if that game's played in Boulder or Tempe or the moon. Arizona State, with given what they needed that win, they should have gotten it, especially when you consider that Evan Batty, the best back-to-the-basket low-post big that Colorado had, didn't play in the second half because of an injury. So another opportunity missed for the Sun Devils.
We've been talking about this a lot, Case, and what's hard, we can sit here and try to project records and say, well, if they go 4-2 in their last six, or if they go 5-1 in their last six, or they go this far in the Pac-12 mm-hmm. tournament, the thing that I'm struggling with is it's not like they're the only bubble team that is going through this, right? This is a constantly moving target, so to try to figure out where they need to finish up relative to everybody else in all of college basketball, to me, that's almost the saving grace for ASU right now. There's a lot of bubble teams right now that are struggling with this.
It's a good point, and I understand it. However, a net ranking of 74 is not a good place to be right now. It's not a good place to be when you're still on a road trip that is going to make its next stop at Utah, a team that is playing well above their roster and is, you know, confident. So your point is good in the fact that, look, we got to get 68 teams in this thing somehow, right? You can't just put the entire Big Ten in there, right? Indiana, for instance, has dropped off a cliff after having a fantastic non-conference ranked in the top 20 in the country. They're nowhere to be found. I think they've won one of their last nine games in that conference. So they were a team that I thought was a lock a month ago, and they're fighting for their lives. It's the same thing with Arizona State. I thought they were a lock coming into the conference play because the Pac-12 was down, and clearly Arizona State was the second-best team, in my opinion, and still are. But they have to – I mean, they have some road games. Remember, they finished with Arizona, and I know Arizona's on a five-game losing streak, but still, throw the records out the window when it comes to that game as well. They have a ton of work to do. They are not – on the bubble right now. I'm very confident in saying the Sun Devils are off of the bubble, but I wouldn't write them off. They can absolutely reel off some wins in a row, but they haven't done it yet. They, regardless of their schedule, they haven't reeled off wins in the Pac-12 conference, maybe since Bobby Hurley has coached this team. So that's why I'm not as confident as maybe some fans out there.
So, Case, your feeling is that they're not even on – forget about being one of the 68 teams in or on a, you don't even think they're a bubble team right now.
I do not think that they are on the bubble. If the selection committee got in a room, this is just my opinion, I don't think Arizona State would make a list of 5 to 10 teams that are in or out. I don't think they're on the list right now.
All right, now how about the conference overall? You think right now, the way it stands, it's a one bid conference? Just one team?
Yes. Yes, which would be the first time in the history of college basketball power conferences that any power conference would have only one team in it. In fact, the all-time low is two, and the Pac-12 is the only power conference team that has done that, and they've done it four times, which isn't a good look for the Pac-12, but that's just the reality of it. The Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12, the SEC have never put in less than three teams in. But yeah, I have to be honest, I covered the entire scope of college basketball, and that's where we sit right now. It doesn't mean that's where we're going to end up. Because look, when the Pac-12 tournament rolls around in Vegas, and I will be there all 4 days, I'm not betting, I'm not counting out Arizona State at all. But, you know, you're asking me my opinion right now. If the season ended, they're not on the bubble. They're not in.
Wow. Casey Jacobson from FS1, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Last one from me. project it for me then, what to get them in a position where they can have a fighting chance. What do you think they need to do?
So close to winning out in the remaining games of the season. Now, remember, they do have a game at Oregon, which right now Oregon is in the top 70 of net, which means that if you beat a top 70 team on the road, it is considered a quad one victory. So Arizona State is the only team in the Pac-12 right now that has a chance to get an at-large bid that still has a quad one opportunity remaining. So that's the good news for Arizona State. But they have to win it. And I believe this game that I'm calling for FS1 in Utah in 2 days is a must-win as well. That's kind of how I felt about the Colorado. So I know we use that term all the time. It's overused maybe. I think it fits right now for Arizona State. If they don't win at Oregon or if they lose at Utah, they are going to have to win the Pac-12 tournament.
Wow. Casey, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming on for a few minutes. I know you were busy today with that game coming up. Thanks for sneaking us in for a few.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great week.
All right, Case. Take care.
Casey Jacobson joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports.
I'm telling you, I talked to Case this morning. I mean, he did the game last night. We chatted for a while this morning. And I'm telling, that's why I was saying, like, he's like, they're not in. Like, right, like, they're not in. He goes, I don't even think they're close. He goes, that these losses are devastating. They're terrible losses.
Yeah.
So he thinks, like, he thinks they got to, like, win out and then get to the tournament final to even get in.
Casey Jacobson joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Join Kevin McCabe and AZ Preps live Saturday from 9 to 11 a.m. at the Chick-fil-A off of the 202 in Santan Village Parkway in Gilbert. You'll have the chance to win free Chick-fil-A for a year plus Suns, Coyotes, and Innings Festivals tickets. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details on the Chick-fil-A High School Basketball Roadshow Series. He's trying to navigate his first head coaching job with a young roster. How responsible is Igor Kokoschkov for, well, this? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.